Hey everyone, welcome back to AI Special Report. I'm Skylar Monroe. I run an AI research lab at a FANG company, and this is the show where we break down what's actually happening in AI. No fluff, just signal. Big thanks to our sponsors Ada Ago Consulting and Zen Semiconductor. More on them throughout the episode. Today we've got a packed lineup. Universities gearing up for the next era of American innovation, some Harvard dropouts making very questionable choices with smart glasses, a tribute to a legend in computer science, AI slop taking over social media and somehow making people rich, and a decade-old security hole that nobody caught. Let's get into it. All right, first up, MIT in the news, and honestly, this is a story I really enjoyed reading. MIT President Sally Kornbluth sat down with ASU President Michael Crow at a Washington Post Live panel to talk about how universities are positioning themselves for the next wave of technological change in America. And look, on the surface, this might sound like an academic PR moment, but there's actually a lot of substance here worth unpacking. The framing was around America's next 250 years, which is a bold and frankly exciting lens to use. It forces you to think long-term instead of just reacting to whatever's happening in the news cycle this week. And when you apply that lens to AI, the implications are massive. What Kornbluth and Crow were really talking about is pipeline. Who are the scientists, engineers, and thinkers we're building right now who are going to lead us through everything that's coming? Because here's the thing, we're not just in a moment of technological change, we're in a moment of technological acceleration. The pace at which AI is evolving means that the skills you need to be relevant in 5 years are genuinely different from the skills you need today. And universities, which traditionally move slowly, are being forced to reckon with that. MIT has always been a place that blends rigorous theory with real-world application, and that balance is going to matter more than ever. What I found compelling about this conversation is that both Kornbluth and Crow seem to understand that universities can't just be credential factories anymore. They need to be incubators of adaptability, teaching students not just what to know, but how to keep learning as the landscape shifts beneath them. That's genuinely hard to do institutionally. It requires rethinking curriculum, rethinking research priorities, rethinking what success even looks like for a graduate. For those of us in industry, this conversation should matter a lot. The talent pipeline coming out of top research universities directly feeds the teams building the next generation of AI systems. If institutions like MIT and ASU are seriously investing in preparing scientists for a rapidly changing tech landscape, that's good news for all of us. It means we might actually have the human capital to match the computational capital we're building. And honestly, given how intense the talent competition in AI is right now, any serious investment in the pipeline is worth paying attention to. Shout out to MIT for continuing to have these conversations publicly. That transparency matters. Before we move on, quick word from one of our sponsors. Ada is a company that helps businesses integrate AI into their workflows in a real, practical, and scalable way. If you're a leader trying to figure out how to actually operationalize AI inside your organization, not just talk about it, but do it, Ada is worth a serious look. Check out the link in show notes. Okay, story two. And I want to be upfront. This one made me a little uncomfortable. And I think that's actually the right reaction to have. Two former Harvard students are launching a startup that makes smart glasses with an always-on microphone. They want to record everything, all the time. And before they got to this venture, these same two individuals built a facial recognition app for Meta's Ray-Ban glasses that could identify strangers in real time and surface their personal information, including home addresses, just by looking at them. They tested it in public on strangers without consent, and they called it a demonstration. That's what we'd call a serious red flag. Now they're back with a new product, and the pitch is productivity and memory augmentation. The idea being that if your glasses are always listening, you never miss anything. You can recall any conversation, get AI summaries of your day, that kind of thing. And I want to be fair here. The underlying technology concept isn't inherently evil. There's legitimate research into cognitive augmentation and life logging that has real potential value, especially for people with memory conditions, for professionals who need accurate records, for accessibility use cases. The technology itself is not the problem. The problem is who's building it and what they've already shown us about their values. These are two people who, when given access to a powerful capability, chose to demonstrate it by doxing random people in public. That's not a mistake. That's a choice. And it tells you something meaningful about how they think about the relationship between technological capability and human harm. When you're building something that sits on someone's face and records every conversation they have and everyone around them, the ethics of that product are not a secondary concern. They are the primary concern. From a technical standpoint, always-on audio with real-time AI processing is genuinely interesting. The compute and latency challenges alone are non-trivial. But here's what worries me most. The people who get hurt by a product like this aren't the users. They're everyone around the users, every person who sits across from you at a coffee shop, every colleague in a meeting, every stranger on the subway, they become subjects of a recording device they never consented to. And that asymmetry of consent is really where the ethical weight lives. The AI hardware space is going to produce a lot of products like this in the coming years. Smart glasses, always-on assistance, ambient compute everywhere. The industry needs to develop norms around consent and data sovereignty before these things hit mass market, not after. Because if we wait until after, we're going to be cleaning up messes for a decade. This story is a preview of conversations we're absolutely going to be having at scale very soon. Pay attention to it. Now, a moment to honor someone who shaped the very foundations of what many of us do every day. Professor Emeritus Dimitri Bertsekis of MIT passed away recently at the age of 83, and the field of AI and computer science lost one of its true giants. If you've studied optimization, control theory, dynamic programming, or large-scale computation, you have almost certainly encountered his work, even if you didn't know it at the time. His textbooks are legendary. I mean that literally. There are researchers with PhDs from top institutions who will tell you that Bertsekis' books were the clearest, most precise explanations of fundamentally hard material they ever encountered. What made Bertsekis exceptional wasn't just the depth of his contributions, and they were genuinely deep, it was the clarity with which he communicated them. Good mathematical writing is incredibly rare. Most technical material is dense, impenetrable, written for the five people who already understand it. Bertsekis had this ability to take something like stochastic dynamic programming or nonlinear programming and walk you through it in a way that felt almost inevitable. Like, of course, this is how it works. That's a gift that very few people have, and it shaped entire generations of researchers. His influence on AI specifically is easy to underestimate if you only look at the modern deep learning landscape. But the optimization theory that underpins how we train neural networks, the dynamic programming principles behind reinforcement learning, the large-scale distributed computation frameworks, all of that has deep roots in the intellectual tradition that Bertsekis helped build. When you're running gradient descent on a billion-parameter model, you're standing on the shoulders of decades of work by people like him. Beyond his research, he was prolific in a way that's almost hard to believe. Multiple major textbooks, many of which he updated and made freely available online. That generosity with knowledge, that commitment to educating not just his students, but anyone who wanted to learn, is something that should be celebrated and emulated. In an era where knowledge is increasingly paywalled and gatekept, he was doing the opposite. That matters. To everyone who learned from his work, and I suspect that's a large portion of this audience, take a moment to appreciate what he gave us. The field of Adaba AI is what it is in part because of him. Rest well, Professor Bertsekis. Your work will keep teaching long after you. Let's take a quick break to shout out Ago Consulting, that's A-G-O, pronounced Ago. If you're working on silicon development, from AI chips to full system-on-chip design, Ago Consulting brings serious expertise to the table. These are the people you want in your corner when the hardware decisions get hard. Find them through the link in show notes. Story 4, and this one is equal parts fascinating and deeply annoying. Wired has a piece out about AI slop melodramas taking over X, formerly Twitter, and their creators are somehow cashing in. What's an AI slop melodrama? Glad you asked. They're these viral posts, usually short stories or comics, featuring dramatic tales of good triumphing over evil. Think, brave single mom stands up to cruel landlord and wins. Kind disabled veteran gets revenge on corrupt boss. That kind of thing. They hit every emotional trigger perfectly. They get millions of views. And they are almost entirely AI generated. The creators figured out something really clever in a cynical way. X's monetization system pays out based on engagement and impressions. AI can generate this content extremely cheaply and at scale. Emotional melodrama gets shared like wildfire because it triggers moral outrage and then moral satisfaction in rapid succession. That's basically a dopamine speedrun for your brain. So you have a situation where the economics perfectly incentivize flooding the platform with low effort, emotionally manipulative, algorithmically optimized content. And it's working. What's interesting to me technically is how good the content generation has gotten at hitting emotional beats. These aren't random outputs. The people running these accounts have clearly done some prompt engineering or fine-tuning to produce stories that consistently hit the same narrative structure. Setup, conflict, villain, redemption, triumph, every time. And the AI is good enough at this now that a casual reader doesn't notice or doesn't care. The verisimilitude is high enough to trigger the emotional response, and that's all that matters for the engagement metrics. From a platform integrity standpoint, this is a real problem. Not because AI-generated content is inherently bad, it isn't, but because the incentive structure rewards deception. These accounts aren't disclosing that their content is AI-generated. They're presenting synthetic stories as if they're real human experiences. And when you combine that with the scale at which AI can produce content, you get an information environment that's increasingly saturated with manufactured emotion that erodes trust in genuine stories. It creates noise that makes signal harder to find. For those of us in AI, this is another one of those uncomfortable mirror moments. We built these incredibly capable content generation tools. We're rightfully proud of what they can do. And then someone uses them to game an engagement algorithm and make money off manufactured outrage and fake heartwarming stories. It doesn't make the tools bad, but it does mean we need to think harder about the systems those tools exist within. The problem isn't the AI, it's the incentive structure of the platform. Fix the incentives and you change the behavior. Leave them broken and this is just going to get worse. And here's the kicker, the people doing this are making real money, significant money, apparently, which means others are going to copy them. We're likely at the beginning of this curve, not the middle of it. Social media platforms need to get serious about AI content disclosure requirements, and they need to do it now. Not because AI content is bad, but because undisclosed synthetic content at scale is a form of manipulation. Full stop. All right, last story, and this one is a security nightmare that I genuinely cannot believe took this long to surface. Ars Technica is reporting that Microsoft Secure Boot, the security feature built into pretty much every modern PC that's supposed to ensure only trusted software loads at startup, has been broken for a decade, and apparently nobody noticed until now. The culprit is a set of old, forgotten shims. These are small bootloader programs that Microsoft failed to revoke, which means attackers who know about them can use these shims to bypass Secure Boot entirely, and the system just lets them in. Let me explain why Secure Boot matters for people who might not live in the system security world. When you boot up a computer, there's a chain of trust that's supposed to verify each piece of software before it runs. Secure Boot is the foundation of that chain. If you can bypass it, you can load malicious software at a level so deep in the system that most security tools can't even see it. We're talking about the ability to install firmware-level malware, rootkits, bootkits, stuff that survives operating system reinstalls, survives hard drive replacements, stuff that is genuinely incredibly hard to detect and remove. The shim mechanism itself is legitimate and important. It exists to allow third-party software like Linux bootloaders to work with Secure Boot without requiring Microsoft to sign every piece of third-party code directly. So there's a valid architectural reason these things exist. The failure here is operational, not conceptual. Microsoft had a list of shims that should have been revoked, essentially blacklisted as they became outdated or were no longer needed, and they just didn't do it. For 10 years, from an AI angle, and I know some of you are wondering why this is in an AI show, here's why it matters. We are deploying AI systems at scale on top of infrastructure that it turns out has trust assumptions that don't hold. If your secure boot chain is compromised, your AI workloads, your model serving infrastructure, your training pipelines, your data processing systems, they're all running on a foundation that could be tampered with below the operating system level. That's a really unsettling place to be, especially as AI infrastructure becomes critical infrastructure. There's also a broader lesson here about technical debt and security. Revocation lists, certificate management, shim registries, this is the boring, unglamorous work of maintaining security hygiene. And when organizations don't do it, the debt accumulates silently until someone finds it. 10 years is a long time. The question that should keep Microsoft's security team up at night is who else found this before the researchers who published it? Vulnerabilities like this don't sit undiscovered forever. They get found, they get used, and then eventually someone publishes. The public disclosure is rarely the first discovery. If you manage systems, especially enterprise or cloud infrastructure, go check your secure boot configurations. Make sure you're running updated revocation lists. This is punishable, but only if you actually apply the patches and verify your chain of trust. Don't let this be the kind of story you read and think, wow, scary, and then move on. Take the 30 minutes, check your systems. It matters. A quick final word from Zen Semiconductor, an umbrella company with a portfolio of silicon industry companies, and they're also behind Ada, which helps businesses deploy AI at scale across any industry. Their Glow Accelerator is particularly worth knowing about. It makes AI models run faster and cheaper, which in this environment is not a nice to have. It's a competitive necessity. Check out the link in show notes for more on Zen Semiconductor and what they're building. And that's a wrap on today's episode of AI Special Report. We covered a lot of ground, from the future of university education in an AI-accelerated world, to the ethics of always-on surveillance hardware, to a tribute for a computer science legend, to synthetic slop gaming social media, to a decade-old security hole in one of Microsoft's most fundamental protections. Never a dull moment in this space. A AI Special Report, brought to you by Ada, Ago Consulting, and Zen Semiconductor. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out Unzip in the Ada Podcast Network. It's a fantastic show that this audience is going to love. Make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. And if you found this valuable, share it with someone who should be listening. Full show notes with links and sources are available. Check the link in show notes. See you next time.